Business today moves faster than ever. If you are slow to adapt, then you will get left behind. If you're still running on QuickBooks, that's you. It's time to hit the gas and accelerate with NetSuite. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/wallstreet.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, May 14th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. The video gaming platform Roblox is rooted in a concept called the metaverse. It's a place where people can get together and interact in millions of virtual experiences. Roblox itself is just a platform, and users can use the tools it provides to build their own games and experiences. The company has been a big beneficiary of the pandemic. It went public earlier this year, and it's seen huge growth, especially from families looking to keep young kids busy. It's grown to more than 42 million daily users, most of them under 13 years old. On today's episode, we'll hear from Roblox's founder and CEO, David Baszucki, on how the company's thinking about moderating content for all those kids on the platform, and how it's working to expand the metaverse. He spoke with our tech editor, Bodhi Atwey, at the Journal's Future of Everything Festival. We'll have their conversation after these headlines. People familiar with the matter say that the operator of Colonial Pipeline paid a ransom to hackers to try to unlock its computer systems. Bloomberg reported earlier that Colonial had paid a sum of $5 million. The Journal could not corroborate the amount of the ransom payment. It's not clear whether the payment directly enabled Colonial to restart its pipeline operations. Colonial declined to comment on the ransom. The news comes after Colonial said it had resumed service through its entire system yesterday. And as we've seen an uptick in cyber incidents during the pandemic, that trend is leading cyber insurers that cover these kinds of incidents to raise prices and limit coverage. Our reporter James Rendell says they're concerned that these payouts are actually encouraging the hacking.
Cyber insurance has been an emerging area of coverage for a while, but the problem is that while insurers were happy to write coverage in the first place, as this level of crime has increased, they're shelling out more and more and more as people get hit and as they claim on their insurance policies. And frankly, it's starting to become an area of concern. If you look at the direct loss ratios, for instance, which measure the losses from claims, they've risen to astronomical proportions over the last couple of years.
Amazon is embarking on yet another hiring spree. After adding more than 500,000 employees in 2020, the company said yesterday that it would hire 75,000 new warehouse workers. And in some locations, it's offering $1,000 signing bonuses. Average pay for the open roles sits at $17 an hour, more than the company's typical starting wage of $15 an hour. In other staffing changes, Apple has parted ways with the prominent ad tech executive Antonio Garcia Martinez just weeks after hiring him. The company didn't disclose more details about his departure, but the action came after some employees raised concerns about passages in his memoir about his prior job at Facebook that they said were sexist and misogynistic. Garcia Martinez didn't respond to requests for comment. A spokesman for Apple said the company works to create an inclusive, welcoming workplace where everyone is respected. And finally, more Apple news. Today, the company will wrap up week two of its court battle with Epic Games, the maker of the popular video game Fortnite. Epic takes issue with a 30% commission that Apple takes on purchases made through its App Store and accuses Apple of being anti-competitive. Apple says it isn't a monopoly and that the fees it collects are necessary to do things like protect privacy and security. The trial is expected to continue through most of May, and the result could have a big impact on the rest of the App Store ecosystem, including other video game developers. We spoke to the head of one such company, the founder and CEO of the video gaming platform Roblox, about that and lots more at our Future of Everything Festival. That conversation after the break.
If you're a business owner, you don't need us to tell you that running a business is tough. Don't let QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down anymore. Now is the time to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Join the over 24,000 companies using NetSuite right now. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/wallstreet. netsuite.com/wallstreet.
Morning, everyone. And Dave, thanks for joining me here on the main stage. what we're going to be talking about is basically how the platform actually ties into the concept of the metaverse. So what is the concept of the metaverse, and how does it speak to the future of potentially how people are going to do anything online?
Yeah. Hey, Bo, thank you for having us here. And we just want to thank our community and our new investors. Every day, over 43 million people on Roblox come together to play, to work, to learn, and to experience together. It's an online immersive platform that's 100% created by a rich developer and creator community.
And, you know, so the developer community obviously is something that's pretty important, because in many cases, it's not Roblox that's actually producing, you know, what people are seeing and what people are engaging in. It's, you know, folks who are actually designing the software, and then Roblox operates in the platform. Talk about how you guys manage that relationship and kind of what you're looking for from, you know, people who are ultimately creating the games and experiences that you have.
Yeah, in our vision, and I think this is a unified vision of the metaverse that has been shared by sci-fi writers, futurists, we're almost shepherds of this metaverse. There's essentially an infinite variety of content and places where people can go, either to hang out, to play, to experience together. And on Roblox, that's millions and millions of pieces of content. It's everything from ancient Rome to a more traditional obby game to interesting social experiences like working together in a pizza restaurant, which amazingly a lot of people find to be a lot of fun. Because this is all created by our creator community, there is this infinite variety, and our creators span all the way from really young hobbyists who are getting interested in coding and game design and art and architecture, all the way to a migration to maybe a full-time job. And then ultimately we see larger and larger studios showing up on the platform. These are studios of 30 or 40 or 50 people that are making literally tens of millions of dollars a year. We create the platform. We focus a lot on the civility and the safety and the tools to support this platform and ecosystem. But the real stars are the creators and developers who are making everything.
So in dealing with that, obviously you guys are in the world of user-generated content. So we're talking about YouTube, we're talking about TikTok, and it's a slightly different model than just producing a game and having everyone play it. And that presents challenges. You spoke to some of that, but, you know, explain to us, how much effort do you have to put into keeping people safe, knowing that a lot of the people who use your platform are kids?
Yeah, we have a big and I would say optimistic view around civility on our platform. And our optimistic view is that if made the top priority and if done right, we're not going to be in a defensive posture. We're actually going to have people learning about civility on our platform as they interact with others and they respond to how we really run the platform. So this goes all the way from thousands of people monitoring things 24/7. It goes to our AI and ML around safety and security. We really think the metaverse can bring people together around the world, have people learn and meet different people from different backgrounds. So it's our top priority.
And obviously meeting people that obviously presents challenges. I think in your public disclosures, I think you guys say more than half of the people who use the platform are younger than 13. So explain to us, you know, do you have age gating restrictions in terms of what users can or can't see depending on how old they are? And does that differ based on the platform that they might be using to engage with Roblox?
Yeah, there's two ways we think about civility. One is the type of content on the platform, and then also the communication on the platform. And I think when people look at communicating on the platform, There's an amazing amount of commentary and buzz around the degree we go to prevent sharing of personal information in the communication on the platform. On the content on the platform, every piece of content, images, sounds, 3D objects go through human moderation. So we're leaning in really heavily on both of these. We believe it's the foundation for civility, which has made Roblox such a great way for people to connect, for example, in the midst of COVID, where it's hard to be together in person at times.
So I just want to drill down on the kids, though, because a lot of the pandemic fuel popularity was among young users. And, you know, your company was among those in the tech space that did very well during the pandemic. You know, your usership, viewers went up, revenue went up. There's a lot of momentum. But like, what do you think might be the impact of all the time that the kids, especially young kids, are spending on the platform and how it could potentially affect their development going forward?
Yeah, first we want COVID to end, and we also we really want everyone to be playing outside and doing all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to screen time, we believe it's really exciting for people, rather than consuming content and absorbing, to interact with other people. We believe there are all kinds of advantages around creativity, learning, social interaction. So that's the area where we lean in on Roblox and where we're excited about the opportunity. And in the midst of COVID, I believe what we may have seen is some exchange for other types of screen time to interactive screen time, whether it was a birthday party or trying to hang out when people couldn't be together in the real world, for example.
So how do you square the idea that, you know, kids need to play outside with, we actually need people to spend time on the platform? And not only time, one of the biggest ways you make money is by people spending money in the platform. So how do you square those two?
Yeah. It's kind of counterintuitive, but almost all of the product discussions we have within the company start on this foundation of civility, and then they go to what's the quality of the engagement. Are people having rich experiences with friends? Are they imagining together? Are schools starting to go to ancient Rome rather than watch a video or read a book? The vast majority of people on our platform are not spending any money on the platform. This is one of the byproducts of the freemium business model. But for those who do, there's a wonderful opportunity to enhance one's avatar, to possibly spend Robux in the experiences. But really, the economy is a system that follows from trying to create quality engagement.
You talk about the idea of doing more than just game within Roblox. So explain to me, I think at one point you said Roblox executives during the pandemic, instead of meeting in person, were actually meeting inside of the platform. So explain to me how that works and where you see the opportunity for Roblox.
Yeah, when we share this vision of playing, learning, and working together within immersive experiences, we've all seen a lot of the play. We're starting to see a little bit of the learn, and we're prototyping the work. And as we, you know, we haven't all been able to have our big town hall meetings like we used to do every week. So we've built a model of the Roblox headquarters in Roblox. We come together there every week. And in addition, it's a place we're prototyping some of our new functionality. We're prototyping safe voice communication. There's some really exciting things that happen in 3D that are hard to do in a video call. For example, when we have 500 people, if you and I wanted to walk over to the side and have a little chat, we could do it just like we do in real life without jumping to a separate room or without making a special chat between us. So we really view this immersive communication that involves both presence in 3D as well as communication as being a really big thing. When we hosted the Lil Nas X concert, I went to that concert with my daughter. And there was a very different feeling when we were both dancing in the concert. Some Roblox fans were dancing with us. It felt very different than watching it on a screen. And I think there's a really bright future for this new form of being together.
So we should expect leaning into concerts, potentially voice chat coming to Roblox at some point, and maybe other features even layered on beyond that.
Yeah. And I think what you'll see from Roblox with voice is an authentically and consistent with our vision around civility and safety around doing this. On entertainment, you'll see more and more immersiveness and more awesome experiences. We just had Royal Blood host our Bloxies, and I think we had over 20 million people participate. So yeah, these are awesome places where immersive 3D can really bring people together.
for Roblox, not adjacent to the what you guys are doing, but you got your name has come up a lot in a really big lawsuit between Epic Games and tech giant Apple. In some cases, your Roblox is a platform, but in other cases, especially as you as Roblox gets distributed so that people can play it on different devices, you guys are a developer. So explain to me, how is Roblox viewing this case at this time, knowing the massive implications it could have on the software development landscape?
Yeah, so a couple of things. We are, you know, we're good partners with Apple, with Google, with Microsoft, and many others. And this partnership, we've built a business model that's really resilient to this. So our business model is based on the way these current store fees work. We believe there's an emerging new category. You could call it a metaverse app category. It's the category that involves a persistent avatar, that persistent avatar going from place to place, all of the places you visit having consistent economy, moderation, safety, communication, millions of places, because it's all powered by user-generated content, and also cool technology that eliminates latency. So for example, in the Roblox case, we do a lot of local 3D simulation so you can feel your avatar. And I think these are the attributes of this new and emerging metaverse app category.
Understanding that you're talking about cloud, but you're also talking about the ability to go from platform to platform. And that's literally the tension point between the fight between Epic and Apple. So I don't know if you're able to say how much you provide to Apple, but understanding that a lot of platforms are concerned about keeping people in. And what you're talking about is doing the exact opposite.
Yeah, I can't comment on what, you know, Apple or other people are thinking. What I can comment on is that Roblox, like really many, many other social apps, and also many of the apps I might call a metaverse app, are on many, many platforms. And I think this is well established. So, you know, I feel we'll see where this goes. One of the things that if it were to happen, if the end result of this were changes in store fees, one thing we've been really public about is we set up our business model so the majority of that increased coming into us with fewer store fees, we would just move that to our developer base. So that would be one possible outcome of this, if something happened. And if Apple's store fees stay the same, we have a great business with that.
Understood. You know, Roblox has had an interesting path to public markets. You're still a relatively new public company. Last year, you initially planned an IPO, then delayed it. Then you ultimately decided to do a direct listing. You could have taken the opportunity to do the IPO last year, and markets might have welcomed it, and the price would have went up. But why fundamentally did you not want to do that? And what message do you think you would have to founders who might be considering the same thing?
The quick answer is, wow, that direct listing was so relaxing for us. Why was it so relaxing? As we looked at our direct listing, there were four key contingents that we were thinking about all of them. We were thinking about long-term investors who might be selling. We were thinking about long-term employees who might be selling. We were thinking about our awesome new institutional investor partners who might be buying. And we're also thinking about the whole Roblox community, where we were hearing rumblings from our developers and our consumers, oh, I want to buy Roblox stock too. What was really cool about the direct listing is that it essentially does a little stock market simulation before that first trade and matches up all of those contingencies at a specific price. And so our longtime employees, our long-term investors, our new institutional and our new small investors all traded right at that same price, $64.5. And following that, we've been fairly tightly within that band ever since. So right after that direct listing, I didn't have the hangover. Oh my gosh, our employees sold low and then it went high, or someone paid low and then all of our developer community paid high. We really all were right in that same price. And that honestly made it very relaxing. So I'm a huge proponent. It may work better for companies with a big consumer following. I know there are some companies that don't that aren't out in the consumer space. And so they may need the traditional demand side of a traditional IPO. But for us, I'm so glad we did it.
Looking forward, what do you see? How do you see the idea of Roblox working in a work environment as a way to potentially allow professionals to create content through the online platform?
Yeah, one of the things in addition to the town hall that we're mocking up, is what is the ultimate collection of tools that brings together in-office and remote workers at the same time. And there's in the last 6 to 9 months, there's been a whole plethora of amazing products trying to figure that out, trying to build spatial versions of the office. In our vision, that is a 3D immersive spatial audio type setup. And one could imagine that what brings both distributed and local work together is this concept of a shared 3D experience. So in addition to our town hall, we're starting to mock up the idea that every team has a immersive Roblox workspace, all the way to the fun stuff, as if when I'm working, I can put on my headphones so I don't hear everyone. If I take my headphones off, I can hear the chatter around me, trying to rebuild that feeling that we have when a team works together in the same space.
But that's all the time we have today. Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate us being here.
That's it for Tech News Briefing this week. Our supervising producer is Chris Zinsley. Our executive producer is Kateri Yoakum. And I'm your host, Amanda Llewellyn. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.